Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I can't hear anything.
I didn't... Welcome back to the Monsters and Socks podcast, where Dan says he can't hear anything because I didn't say anything. That's the first thing they're going to hear, Dan. I'm not re-recording it. This is it. We're
okay.
Going.
I was referring to the truck that you are supposedly worried about for some reason. That's what I couldn't hear. I was aware that you weren't speaking with your mouth.
Yeah,
I was letting you know that I couldn't hear any supposed truck.
Well, for the real Monsters of Socks heads, they're going to perk up. They'll go, oh, that was different. That was different. For our new fans, welcome. While you are listening to our podcast, while the Forever 500 Red Sox continue their quest to be within two games of 500 at all times, is between you and your dog. But we're happy you're here. Dan, how do you feel about Boston Red Sox baseball team?
I have no idea how I feel about the Boston Red Sox baseball team. It's so funny. Like last week, I think, and whenever you have a weird kind of bad season, which this is sort of starting to look like it's going to be, well, the kind of bad, you know, maybe we'll discuss whether it's kind of bad. It's certainly a weird season. Whenever you have a season like that, there's always like one game or one day that you point to at the end of the year and say that was sort of the bottom that represented all of the team's problems. You know, to me, like I think one of the classic examples of this, if you think about like the Bobby Valentine season, it doesn't get weirder and sadder than the Bobby Valentine season, and like. The day Euclid's last game, where you know he had that awkward curtain call. We kind of knew the last game thing was coming. He was butting heads with Valentine the whole season. Like that game always stuck out in my mind as like the game of that year that represented that year. It seems like so far, right now, we're going to look at the Matt Dermody start as kind of that day for the 2023 Red Sox. The Red Sox are just were and still are in the middle of a brutal stretch of baseball where they're not just losing games, but they're losing ugly with terrible defense and just absolutely bats that are doing nothing at all. And then, you know, blue comes out. We don't need to discuss Dermot anymore. We will discuss Dermot anymore when we get to the anger scale. We don't need to start the show off with him like we did last week.
Thank you. Really thank you, like, because I do have things to say, but I didn't want to, like, you're right.
We don't need to start with it. We don't need to start with it.
Obviously, I know what you're like going to say, and you know what I'm going to say. And
yes,
anyone correct. Who listens knows about those things. So let's say things that they don't know. And then
right. So we'll put the specifics aside for now. But the point is that really seemed like a low point that was kind of representative of what is maybe turning into a bad, ugly season. You know, and the numbers for the past month are in a lot of ways ugly. They're since taking the first two games against the Padres, which was represented the end of a four-game winning streak for the Sox, they've gone 8-15. They have not won more than two games in a row in that stretch. They're playing ugly baseball. And yet, at the same time, and I read this morning in a piece that Bob Osgood just published on Over the Monster about James Paxton. Since the day that James Paxton joined the rotation, which was May 12th, so we're now over a month, Red Sox starters have the sixth best ERA in baseball. At 3.76, and the second highest K rate in baseball, 9.5 strikeouts per nine. So the one thing that we started this season really worried about, knowing that it's just a total question mark, the starting rotation, the one thing that was awful for the first month of the season, has now stabilized into something of a strength. And yet at the same time, while the Red Sox are pitching outstanding, they're playing horribly overall with absolutely terrible defense. Same date since Paxton joined the rotation, the hitters are 25th in F WAR and 27th in home runs overall. So I just don't know what this team is right now. Do you have any idea what this team is?
I don't think the rotation is as strong as the stats indicate. I think that James Paxton and now Garrett Whitlock have been very good.
Garrett Whitlock has been great, but I do want to just interject because I couldn't believe this when I read this again in Bob's piece this morning. So Garrett Whitlock has had 16 career starts. I couldn't believe that, first of all, when I read that. And then secondly, only 5 of his 16 career starts have been quality starts. Can you believe that?
Yes, but only because quality starts is such a weird.
It is kind of weird and dumb, but I mean, he had one of them last night. It's if you had asked me like, what's Garrett Whitlock done the past month? I would have been like, oh, he struck 3 or 4 quality starts in a row.
Yeah. It's you know what kills the quality start? 5.2.
Yes, that is 5.2 really good point.
Is such a, it, especially if you're watching in real time and it's like fantasy and maybe it's not even the Red Sox and you're sort of peeking in. I do this on my phone and I'm watching. It's like, say the inning's over. And it'll be like, so-and-so came in to pitch for so-and-so. And I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah. Brought in a lefty to get one final tough out. You know, something
you,
like that.
You know who one of those starters that counts toward Bob's numbers there? That's Matt Dermody.
That's true. Yeah, those, even with the Dermody start in there.
Paxton has been, but you know what the Paxton arc has been? It's what I said the best case scenario for Sale was. That they just wait until he is at 100%. The difference is that I think Sale might have been at 100%, and it just
toward the end, he certainly was. Yeah.
Can't sustain it. But Paxton is so good. I mean, I know he's a good pitcher, but this is on par with the best he's ever looked. And it's couldn't happen at a better time. However, it is a little bit, ultimately, perhaps worrisome, because if that's what's sustaining the team, that might not last to that degree. By the way, no one has my phone number. I assume you can hear the phone ringing. Strictly for emergencies. That is a spam call.
Or it could be an emergency. You never know.
No, it's for calling out during emergencies. Oh, for children.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Anyhow, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, look, I hate to be the one to say this. Just as I wrote a month ago when I wrote a piece for the site about regression, I started off by saying I hate to be the one to say that Alex Verdugo and Connor Wong and Reese McGuire are going to come back to Earth, but they are.
And Jaren Duran.
Jaren Duran. I actually didn't even put him in the piece because it was so obvious that he would. Yeah. But so just as I hated to say that, I hate to say this, but I feel like I have to. James Paxton is going to get hurt. It is a matter of when, not if. It's a matter of when, and it's a matter of how hurt he gets. I mean, Paxton was Chris Sale before Chris Sale became Chris Sale, in terms of just being a pitcher whose body cannot hold up. Obviously, he's coming off Tommy John right now, but even before he had Tommy John, he was constantly on the IL with different back issues, and you know, little. There was nothing major until the Tommy John, but he never completed a full season. He never even came close. And now he's 34 years old and hasn't really pitched in 2 years. Like, he is going to get hurt.
I disagree with your assessment of his numbers, even if I agree with the overall broader point, because he did in 2018, 2019, 160, 150 innings, 28 and 29 starts in back-to-back years. That's close enough to a full season that I'll take it. Again, yeah, right,
That was 4 years ago. And then how many times in his career has he started more than 20 games?
Four. Well, he started exactly 20 once. So either three or four, depending on how you count.
Yeah.
But I do think that almost unlike Sale at this point, the product you're going to get when he's out there is quite good. It's the Ks per nine are lovely. The ratios are great.
He has such good command too. Yeah. That's the thing that we're always told to worry about post Tommy John. You know, they say the velocity comes back, but it's the command and control that struggles.
It's weird. It's such a mind fucking away, because I was watching the game. It's like, oh, pitchers can do this. Like, yeah. Really good pitchers can. Oh, you want to throw it there with two strikes and he won't swing, and like you can do it. That's awesome.
Like, the word that came to mind to me when I was watching the other night was just like, he's a clean pitcher.
Yeah.
He's just clean. Like, he hits the glove. And, you know, it's you're never really worried about a pitch going to the backstop or anything like that, or him totally falling apart and, you know, allowing eight straight hits like Corey Kluber did. By the way, I do want to get back to that. I've been meaning to.
They deserve that. They deserve it, that man.
Yeah, so. I actually do want to revisit that. I think maybe I'm going to write about that, because it's kind of. It got lost in just the whole shittiness of that night, but that's amazing. A pitcher giving up eight straight hits like this. This is all we should be talking about for a week. The fact that that happened, I can't believe that happened. That's insane.
And the Schadenfreude was off the charts.
Kluber's been such a whipping boy for this team for so long, and his performance has certainly deserved it. But on the heels of Whitlock's gem last night, there was an article, I want to say it was Mass Live and Sean McAdam. Whitlock just talked about what an outstanding mentor Corey Kluber has been for him all season long, and just the way that, like, Kluber is just sitting down next to him on the bench every night and just teaching Whitlock how to focus in on at bats, and, you know, asking, you know, he sees that, you know, the hitter fouls went off to the right side, and he makes Garrett Whitlock tell him was the hitter late on that swing, or was he trying to go the other way? You know, like fascinating little pitcher things like that. You know, maybe we've been wondering for a long time why Corey Kluber hasn't been the one to get DFA'd. Like, you know, I wonder how much of it is stuff like that, that, you know, that maybe he's the pitching coach, a huge help. You know? He's the pitching coach. Yeah. People are wondering why Dave Bush is, you know, hasn't been on the hot seat. Maybe Dave Bush is Corey Kluber's lieutenant.
I really do think that there's value in that, that doesn't end up as being supplemental, because if it can truly help Garrett Whitlock, given Corey Kluber's salary, it sort of will pay for itself. I don't think it's something that the teams are super probably mindful of when they're going to bring a guy aboard, but they obviously know it's possible. And I think it also, you don't know how the personalities are going to mix, you know, maybe somebody was like, I don't want to hear what you have to say, but that value is real. And, you know, most pitching coaches haven't won 2 Cy Young awards. They won't always have the opportunity to talk to someone who has been as good as Kluber has been in his career. And so you love to hear it. I saw that. Yeah. I saw the same article. It's wonderful. I'm just happy that now when I said Whitlock was the, I mean, according to you, if Paxton gets hurt, that puts Whitlock, whose injury history is totally stellar and clean, obviously, right back up at the top. So happy that my preseason prediction that he would be the best pitcher has some life in it now.
It may possibly come true. It may possibly come true. So, so maybe I'm crazy. Because like we said, the Red Sox are in many ways in total free fall right now. They are totally out of the division picture, obviously. And yes, theoretically, you know, they've been hanging around the 4 to 6 games back from the wild card spot. But there are a lot of teams in front of them that they have to crawl through. And I'm still expecting, the Mariners to go on a run at some point, and climb back into the wild card picture. I think the Angels are going to hang around. So they're in a tough spot. And yet this pitching is making me feel kind of good about the rest of the season. Like maybe. And so we saw, so let's talk about what we saw Brian O'Halloran say on Monday in The Athletic. He was asked pointedly, trade deadline's coming up. Are the Red Sox going to be sellers? And he pointedly said, no, we are looking to improve this team. Now, look, they can use the word improve this team to justify a lot of different moves that
may Jeff end up looking Supan. Like Jeff Supan getting a stray for the second straight week.
But maybe they're kind of right. Maybe as dark and as bleak as things looked last week and still look this week, you know, like, look, they haven't turned things around yet. They just lost 2 out of 3 at home to the Rockies. You know, maybe things aren't so bad here. I don't know.
I mean, they're not so bad. They're 1 game below 500 with a +1 run differential. They are a 500 team in the toughest division in baseball by far. And yet, I cannot help but believe that the claim that they're going to improve the team is a technicality.
I think you're right. I just don't see them parting with what it would take.
They're not going to make a Juan Soto trade. They're not going to make a Juan Soto trade.
Of course not, no. And I don't even think I don't even think they're going to make a Kyle Schwarber trade. Like, you know, we can go down from Juan Soto. Of course, they're not going to do a Soto or, you know, level. And I don't even know if anyone like Soto will be on the market. You know, the only guy looking at the start of the year, everyone's looking at Ohtani. But like I said, the Angels are hanging around. The Angels are hanging around. And I just don't see them trading trading the greatest player of all time and the only thing that's keeping their team worth watching right now at the end of this year. I just don't see it happening. So I don't think there is going to be a Juan Soto on the market to begin with. And then I just, like, we all know what Bloom's trying to do with the farm system. You think he's going to start trading like Nick York and Zidane Raffaello, who has frankly lost a lot of his value this year anyway, in order to get like a number two or three starter in the rotation?
Of course not. Just of course not.
Right. So that's like, how would they even add to this team?
Oh, I mean, you can always add at the fringes. There's relievers, of course, and fourth outfielder types. I mean, look, at this point,
you think that's what they're going to, if they're going to stick to this line of we're going to improve this team, you think they're then going to go out and just get like a middle reliever and a bench bat and say, we see, we did it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I will say this. Obviously, the minor league system is not going to get gutted. But
no.
I would not be surprised at all if Duran was gone at the trade deadline. He is now a fourth outfielder.
Mm.
He has fallen back down.
Arguably even fifth. Right. You know, we don't know how this is going to shake out between Kike and Duvall in center field.
Right. Now, he's cheap. So that's good, but
I don't think they're going to give him up either. Like, I don't see Bloom giving up a young player who's still cost control for another 3 or 4 years at least. I don't see that happening.
I don't see them
adding to this team.
I mean,
they
will add somebody, and they will say, "Hey, look, we got better." Remember, Bloom's thing is to wait until the absolute bitter end and just sign whoever's left for pennies on the dollar. That's what he does.
Fair enough. Yeah. That does describe the
Schwarber deal. And he will say, oh, that made us better.
Story deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see them doing much. And frankly, like, given that, I mean, selling, I don't think they're going to have the guts to sell either. But if they did, if they were like, okay, who wants James Paxton? Who wants Kenley Jansen? Who wants Chris Martin? I mean, I think like those three guys alone, especially Paxton, could net them some really nice pieces.
And I think that was inherent in signing them. I think I said this specifically about Kenley, is that when you sign a guy like that, he's 38, you sign him, have to trade him, you know? You are banking on you being in the position where he matters to you. And someone like that at the deadline would be very, very attractive, especially because he's been pretty good this year, to a team in a more viable contending space. Because the Red Sox are not contenders largely circumstantially. I mean, you said, I don't think the Angels are going to trade Ohtani. Well, they're better than the Red Sox in every way. And they are in their division as well. Like, they're in it. Where's the Red Sox?
I don't think they will be at the end. I think a lot of the AL standings have been skewed by the Astros' slow start. But I'm expecting the Astros to just take off any minute now, really. I don't think they will be in the division come August. But all right, so let's imagine then, let's fast forward to the trade deadline. And let's say the Red Sox, as you said at the top of the show, are still exactly where they are. They're, you know, within two games of 500. And they are around five games or fewer out of the last wild card. Like, what would you want them to do at the trade deadline?
See, I actually don't think they're going to trade Kenley, because if they say that their goal is to make the team better, that would plainly not make the team better.
Well, I know this is why I'm kind of bothered by what I've been coming out saying.
That's what I would
want. I think I would too. I think if the Sox are in this position at the trade deadline, I would absolutely want to send Paxton, Jansen, and Martin packing and just see what you can get for it.
Martin, maybe not as much, because I think he probably has more left going forward, but it just depends on what someone would pay.
I mean, he's a relief pitcher, whatever. If relief pitchers to me,
if somebody wants him, you can always get one next summer or next winter. They're there.
Exactly. Yeah. And now that they've come out and said this, and look, like we've discussed a lot that what the front office says, what Bloom and Kennedy are saying is very calculated and does in many cases, frankly, just not reflect the reality of what they're doing. We talked about this all off season when they insisted that they know we are trying to win the World Series this year. They're not. They're trying to field a vaguely competitive team while building up the minor leagues. That's what they're doing, right? And they refuse to admit that. And now they've come out and said they're going to be buyers at the deadline. So, are they going to be able to sell James Paxton and Kenley Jansen after doing this? Or do they care? Maybe they don't care. Maybe they will just completely reverse course on what O'Halloran said.
I have to get this off my chest. It's not the first time, but for all the problems I've had with Bloom, I think he's very smart, very capable, working within a framework which he is forced or is chosen to lie about. But he's capable. And what he's doing is working within some constraints that have been set up for him in the way that he has worked before. And as I've said many, many, many times, I expect next year to be this to come more to fruition and the talent to him going after bigger talent as the minor leagues grow. So I understand Bloom's importance. And as much as I criticize him, I think most of what I have criticized him for is not being forthright about what he's plainly doing. But I get it on some level. Sam Kennedy is not Chaim Bloom. Sam Kennedy may help Chaim Bloom in aspects of putting together the Red Sox. Sam Kennedy cannot do it. And I have no interest in hearing a word he says about anything. He is a PR man and a bad one. I am flummoxed by he's like Tom Wamsgans. He's just not a believable person who is clearly an absolute yes man for the organization. And I guess there's one for every organization. I know that David Ortiz loves him. The players love him. And that tracks to me because he seems to be in some senses the general manager of making people get along with the organization, both within it and without it. But God damn, every time he opens his mouth about a player move, about criticism, I think the exact opposite is true. That's not the same way it is with Bloom. I said, I've listened to Bloom on podcasts. Bloom is really smart. He knows what he's doing. He knows that we know that he knows, all of that stuff. Kennedy is someone who the second he starts talking, I believe the opposite in almost every case. I don't like it, Dan.
Yeah, no, that's understandable.
I can't remember anybody like him within the Red Sox orbit ever.
And he seems like such an unnecessary player, period. He really does. I mean, I guess the only reason why we hear from him so much now is because John Henry's just decided he's done speaking to anybody. So someone has to do it. But you're right that it is a role that no one played before. I guess like because the closest analog to what Sam Kennedy was before Sam Kennedy would have been like Larry Lucchino, right? And he took that role in a complete opposite direction. You know, Larry Lucchino.
Larry Lucchino was the team. You know,
right. Yeah, he wasn't like right. He wasn't just the yes man. He was one of the decision makers.
Like I can't think of somebody in another. I'm sure there is one, but someone who's neither the owner nor the GM,
and yet speaks for the team.
And yet speaks for the team. I mean, the place.
This is a really good point.
Who it's the hell? Very yeah. Occam's razor that Henry stopped talking, so Kennedy and Bloom have sort of split up the role of talking for him. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways,
that is all there is.
Kennedy handles the bad stuff and Bloom handles the good stuff, which is why when you know Bloom is talking about bad stuff, things have gone wrong, which we will get to. But I just don't understand the idea that any outsider would find Kennedy appealing or believable in the least. Even among the Bloominati. I'm not talking about Bloom. I'm talking about Sam Kennedy.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Great job if you can get it, though. Great job if you can get it.
I know. Really is. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick pause here, then, and let's find out what you're angry about this week when we come back. Because I do want to basically – I think there's more Kennedy Bloom stuff that we could talk about and we can kick right off with what we need to discuss about those two on the anchor scale.
Oh, you think? All right. We'll be back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we are back. Can't imagine what we're talking about here. Dan, am I mad? You find out.
All right. This isn't what I was going to start with, but given our discussion about Kennedy and Bloom, I think we have to. Brian, how angry are you about the fact that yesterday, Ian Bloom spoke once again about the Matt Dermody situation to the Boston Globe? He claimed that their due diligence process failed, that they are going to beef up their process as a result of this situation. He said, quote, "I really regret it because it caused pain," unquote. And then a couple hours later, Matt Dermody started for the Who Sox.
I am going to stay within the boundaries of the scale, and I am 10 by this whole affair.
Okay.
The most offensive thing to me was that he said, following Thursday night's start, they found more activity on social media that was alarming, which is funny because you and I both wrote pieces on Thursday afternoon and morning that referenced this very activity. Yeah. Which
I mean, Fitz found the Fitz tweets within like 5 minutes of him being announced as the starter.
The day before. It's lying.
It is lying again, yeah.
I do think that there is a marked difference between starting for the Red Sox and starting for the Woo Sox in that minor league baseball is not really about winning and losing.
No, of course not.
So my issue with the Dermody affair, on top of everything else, was that it showed a weakness in team building because Dermody is not like a real prospect. I don't really care.
He's not. No.
I don't really care that he started again. That's almost, I got to say, that's almost like an act of mercy on the organization's part because they fucked up. Okay. They fucked up. All of this was out there. And if you let him go after that one major league start, it kind of paints him as damaged goods. I would not be surprised if they let him go subsequent to the AAA start, almost giving him an opportunity to be like, you're out the door. We fucked up. Whatever. But I don't care. What I care is, again, getting lied to flagrantly and unnecessarily. There is no reason to say after the start, we found out about this stuff, especially how much of an issue it was before the start. It doesn't pass any sort of smell test. So Dan, I am mad about it.
Yeah. And here is where, so to bring Kennedy into this, here's where the question of what does Sam Kennedy actually do and why is his role weird and different than we've ever seen before comes into play. Because with respect to Bloom, look, in a perfect world, would I want Chaim Bloom to consider the character and outside activities and political activities of all players he signs? Sure. I would love for teams to be woke like that, but they're not going to be. And in the alternative, I think I would also understand an office setup where the Red Sox basically said, okay, Chaim Bloom, your job is just to be a baseball team putting together robots. And you are responsible just for focusing on trying to accumulate as much talent as possible. And we will be the ones to step in, we being, you know, Kennedy ownership, whatever, will be the ones to step in and say, you know what? Okay. We understand why there's a baseball reason that Matt Dermody might be a candidate for a spot start in Cleveland on Thursday night, but we're going to step in and stop you from doing that because it's just not worth it to the club overall. That is where Kennedy's job should be. If he is the president of the team, but he's not involved in baseball operations, that's what he should be doing. And yet it seems like, and that's, I think, probably what Lucchino would have been done when he was the president of the team. And yet, obviously, that's not happening. There may be nobody who's sort of taking on that bigger picture role beyond just the pure baseball operations here.
His instinct is always to double down every single time and misdirect. Oh, 2021. What do you mean we're not supposed to be going 2021, 2021, 2021?
Yeah. So it really does seem like his job purely is to just speak. because Henry doesn't want to, because it doesn't seem like he's making decisions. Because if someone should have stepped in before Thursday with the bigger picture and said to Haim, you know what? Yeah, I get it. You want to have a spot starter for tonight. Baseball wise, he's maybe the right candidate to do it, but it's just not worth it to the Boston Red Sox as an institution. Like, there's got to be someone.
They put
who
up
says
the
that.
Pride logo. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. They put up the Pride logo on Twitter. It's all solved now.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. I don't know why they are this way. I mean, I kind of do because Henry has created a vacuum, and I think just left Bloom and Kennedy to just sort of bumble through it, and they're content to do so.
That might be what it is. There is no decision maker right now in the Red Sox for this.
And I agree with you. That would seem to be Kennedy's job.
But it's not. Apparently it's not. All right. Forget about Dermody. Hopefully that's the last time we talk about him. And hopefully I can bring you back here on the scale a little bit. Brian Joyner, how angry are you about the fact that in the five games before facing Gerrit Cole last weekend, Rafael Devers had hit 211, 273, 211. Yes, that means he did not have a single extra base hit, and he struck out four times. In the five games since facing Gerrit Cole, Rafael Devers is hitting 300, 333, 950 with four home runs, five runs, and six RBIs.
I'm going to have to adjust my answer here to the Haim / Sam Kennedy anger, because I don't want it to drown out my anger. So I'll go -7. It would be higher otherwise. But the fact that Cole chokes and gets destroyed by Devers all the time is amazing.
It really is. It really is.
It's incredible. And like, to Cole's credit, he's basically just like, yeah, man, he's really good. Like, just like Cole's great against everybody else, not good against Rafael Devers. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And it didn't have to be Cole that snapped Rafi, but that it was makes all the sense of the world narratively and sort of practically. It's so, so wonderful. Now, if anybody else, if the Red Sox could get a hit with men on base with fewer than two outs subsequent to that, that would be really nice. But
that would be nice. That would be nice. But yeah, no, it's just so wonderful. And not only because, obviously, look, Gerrit Cole is the best pitcher on the Yankees. So Rafael Devers owning him would be wonderful no matter what. But the fact that Gerrit Cole's too, personally, is just such a tool. Like, he really, really is. Just makes it so much better. I mean, this guy, like,
he's the exact opposite of Rafi.
Some of the quotes he comes up with, it's like, yeah, he really is. Yeah, he really is. Like I'm saying, like if this were CC Sabathia as the Yankees' best starter, and like Devers owned him, it would be cool because he's the Yankees' best starter. But because Cole is just like, I don't everything about starting with, you know, remember, he should get more shit for this, and he did at the time, but he should get even more shit in the clubhouse after the Astros lost the World Series. The fact that he took his Astros hat off and put on a Scott Boras Corporation hat. I mean, look, I'm as pro player empowerment as it gets. I want the players to get all the money. I appreciate what Scott Boras does for the sport, but God, could you imagine just being like Jose Altuve and looking across the clubhouse at that moment and seeing Gerrit Cole wearing that hat? What a tool this guy is.
We probably wouldn't see him because there's taller people in the way, but
that's true.
I mean, Scott Boras has many clients who become free agents. Have you seen a Scott Boras Corporation hat before?
I have not.
Exactly.
I have not, yeah.
He's a toolbox, whatever.
He really is. So, yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful that Rafi owns him so much. Rafi turning around. We really need this. This needs to stick.
It isn't helping anything, but, yeah, it does.
No, yeah, we'll see. I mean, he hit two home runs the other night and then sat for a scheduled day off yesterday, which I know a lot of people were frustrated with, but you know, whatever. It was against the Rockies, were starting a lefty. Cora's point about 2 days off in a row being a real rest, I think, is something that fans underestimate a little bit. Because, you know, even on a typical, it's always funny to me when people talk about like giving ball players off days, they still have to show up to the ballpark hours before the game. They still work out. They still take BP. They still dress in uniform. They still are on the bench waiting for a possible pitch hitting opportunity. Like it is barely kind of a rest.
There's a reason lazy Sundays are lazy Sundays. You need a day to get ready to be lazy.
You do. So I'm not terribly upset about Devers taking last night off. I don't think it's going to affect him. We'll see. Hopefully he can carry the offense. All right. Let's see. Where should we go next? How about this? Brian Joyner, how angry are you about the fact that sloppy defense was once again a major part of the story at Fenway Park last night? But this time it was the Red Sox who benefited from two really ugly outfield plays by the Rockies in the seventh inning. There was that weird Rob Refsnyder triple, which I've watched that replay now like three times. I still don't really know what the right fielder did on that play. I don't like, it looks like the ball from where the right fielder is to where the ball ends up. It looks to me like the only way it physically could have happened is if it went directly through his abdomen. So I don't know how he messed up that play. And then later in the inning, there was a ball off the wall that was misplayed off the monster, allowing Justin Turner to just get in at a play at the plate. Sloppy defense finally helps the Red Sox instead of hurting the Red Sox. I don't agree with you about that.
I'm a 5 because of how sloppy the Red Sox have been. But maybe this is karmic. Maybe this is karmic comeback for being like, all right, Kike, nope.
Yeah, another outstanding catch in center field last night too. Another
He's good at center field.
He really is.
But that just going back to Duran, that just further just undercuts any value he might have. I disagree with you on Duran. I think he could be a trade asset because very classic not my guy thing, even if he's cheap, you know.
So yeah, but I see that more as an off-season thing than a trade deadline thing. I don't think
they want to make the team better and he's not playing and they get somebody who does play, I can see how that would fit there.
I guess, but then you'd be looking at like, who are the buyers in that scenario?
Yeah, that's the thing.
No team in contention is going to want Jaren Duran. Like, what are they scoring? Like a little speed off the bench?
What about Duvall? I mean,
I think Duvall, if he starts hitting again, I think he's got to show that his wrist is better first.
Yeah.
I think before teams will be ready for that. But yeah, he could, if he gets it going and starts popping some home runs, I think that's it. Yeah, he's definitely a potential piece.
Are you 34 we'll or older? Yep. Okay. You're on the block.
But yeah, we'll see. I guess that's the thing. It's like Duvall could go to a contender. A contender would want Duvall. I don't see a contender wanting Duran. So they'd be selling him to another rebuilding team, in which case maybe it's a team that just has a good bullpen arm. And so Duran just shores up the Red Sox bullpen. But I don't see Chaim Bloom liking that trade on the basis of value. You know, I don't see him giving up cost control Jaren Duran for a bullpen piece. So that's why I don't see him moving.
That's fair.
All right. So you're 5 about that. Let's stick with defense. Brian Joyner, how angry are you about the fact that Tristan Casas is currently at -6 in the category of defensive runs saved this season? That is the worst mark amongst all first basemen in baseball. And when he was informed about this, Tristan Casas said, quote, "That is very surprising to me. I'm sure if you put me out on the field against every first baseman in the league, I'm just as good, if not better, than every single one of them in terms of my footwork, my arm accuracy, my hard work. So it's surprising to me." What do you think of that quote from Tristan Casas upon being informed that he is arguably the worst defensive first baseman in baseball, he says, you know what? I think I'm the best.
No interest in Casas. I can't imagine. My instinct is that's tongue in cheek, but it's hard.
Yeah, I would like to see it on film if it was recorded.
But I'm -5. I'm not mad about this because this is like for several other people, notably Duran, but I think more so with Casas by far. This is a learn on the job year.
Yeah,
I mean that's what this year is. And
but what's surprising, like we weren't expecting him to have to learn this though. Like the consensus coming into this year was that he was an above average defensive first baseman already, and we expected an improvement over Bobby D here at first base. No one expected him to be this bad, and he looks bad out there too. Like he looks, I mean, he is slow and he is lumbering. And he struggles to get down to the ground because he's just such a big body out there. I don't know. So in that article where he said that quote, they talked about how in his normal pregame routine has involved a lot of diving. Like he likes to he has traditionally liked to spend his pregame focusing on like really difficult plays, where he has to really range the hole and dive for things and go after foul balls near the wall. And I guess the team has decided that that approach obviously isn't working. And they've asked him to stop doing that. And now they're just instituting a pregame routine where he just fields ground balls that are kind of hit right to him. So we're kind of in a Jaren Duran, Jackie Bradley situation again, where it's like, well, have you tried practicing the thing that you're struggling with?
Well, people may or may not hear. I didn't add a read, and I was trying to like real flex on it when I started. And after doing it like 3-4 times and hating it, I was like, why don't you just read the words that are on the page?
Yeah.
And go from there. And it was the same Jackie Bradley Jr., Jaren Duran moment. It was like, oh, just do the thing you're supposed to do, and then you can figure out how to do things beyond that. And yeah, don't be. That set the difficulty low and then make it higher. Don't set it high and try to just bang your head in the wall until you actually hit that level. Grow, yeah. Tristan. Grow.
Yeah. It was an interesting article, and I saw some people on Twitter who were kind of upset with the coaching staff. And I don't know if this is necessarily a fair thing to be upset about, but there were some people who thought they were kind of throwing Casas under the bus. In that article saying like, well, he hasn't been preparing the right way and we got to fix this. And I think maybe there's some merit to that. Like you're the coaches, you're in charge of how these guys prepare for a game. And if Casas has been doing this all season and presumably last season in spring training too, and you think it's a bad way to prepare, and they do think it's a bad way to prepare. It's not just in his case, you know, they came out and Carlos Fabelis, it was either Fabelis or Cora was saying like he doesn't need to dive ever, you know, so let's not practice that. Let's practice the other stuff. Well, it's like you've had months to fix this. You know, you could have done this a long time ago. So maybe, I don't know. Do you think they were being a little unfair to our boy?
It's nice to have someone in the organization tell the truth. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I also get the sense Casas is the type of guy who'd be okay with it. But he's the best first baseman in the league, so of course he would be.
He's the best first baseman in the league. That quote, I don't know. I do. We have to see that on video because I don't know what to make of it. Normally I get bothered. I mean, look, I know all these guys are generally supremely confident in their abilities on a baseball field and supremely confident in pretty much their abilities throughout life. In many cases, it gets them into trouble when they move to areas off the baseball field. So I know they're confident, but I usually kind of am rubbed the wrong way when it seems like a player is just being stubborn about his deficiencies.
Nick Pivetta comes to mind.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Nick Pivetta is a perfect example of this. I think we mentioned Garrett Richards on a couple of pods ago, the same thing when he was demoted and he kept insisting, I know I can go out there and throw six good innings as good as anyone else on this team. It's like, well, you haven't done that at all this year.
That Corey Kluber didn't do this. Like, that's nice archetype of what we know about Corey Kluber is he's accepted his role and is now basically being Garrett Whitlock's pitching coach. So that's all. That's good. You know, that's I'm with you.
Yeah. So I don't know. You're right. Yeah. Like, he might've been joking. We got to see this on tape if it's out there. But yeah, I can't decide yet whether this is another quirky thing about Casas that I love or whether this is the first thing about Casas that's actually bothered me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, if it's true, if he was dead serious, that's way too Hillenbrand vibes for me.
Shit. Don't say that. Don't say that.
I know. He's like, they're not the same guy.
No, they're not. All right. Moving on. Brian Joyner, how angry are you about the fact that in Fangraph's re-ranking, or updating, I should say, of the Red Sox prospect rankings, in which Marcelo Meyer remains number one, Fangraphs uncovered the fact that against approximately 250 non-fastballs that Meyer has seen as of the time of publication, his slash line against them is 098, 233, 118.
I'm more concerned than angry, but I'll go, let's go another five. Today's a 5 day. I mean, look, you don't need to look beyond Jaron Duran to know that when you were a hitter of any sort of skill, of fastballs, you could put up numbers in the minors and it doesn't translate. I got a better example for a better hitter, pure hitter, the Jaron Duran is Nick Madrigal, who I believe was the fourth pick in the draft, right?
Yeah. Loved that guy when he first came up.
I loved him. I thought like, hey man, comes into the league as a top 10 bat to ball guy. And like, I was like, sky is the limit. What I was thinking he would become is basically what Luis Arraez become. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have power, but I am unreal at putting the bat on the ball, putting the ball in play, and getting hits.
Brief digression. We'll get back to this. How pumped are you about Arraez's season so far?
I mean, I love that guy. Like, I love.
Yeah.
This is what.
But like, are you keyed into the 400 chase already? Like, are you checking?
No, I don't believe.
I'm starting to check his highlights and stuff.
I don't believe a 400 chase till August.
Well, that's fair enough. But still, this is like as late as we've had one in like a decade.
Is he above?
Like, I'm not saying he's.
Is he above 400? Oh, he's at 378. He's over his last 12, which is a problem.
Shit.
That's tough.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, but I see what you're talking about because he was at 391 before that.
Damn it!
But Madrigal got demoted by the Cubs.
He was over 400 last week.
Yeah, well, yesterday's price is not today's price. Madrigal, was demoted from the Cubs because he has a slash line of, like, he has no walks, which is weird, and nothing but singles. I mean, maybe he has doubles and some sack fly, but his OBP and his slugging were the same, right? And it's under 300, bad. He went down to the minors and hit like 400, 500, 1100 in 10 days. Just absolutely murdered AAA. Came back, shit again. That's because I can go.
He seems like a good candidate for like Korea or Japan.
Yeah. I mean,
he's Matt Merton, basically.
Yeah. Like batting title in Japan type guy. But like, it's so much easier to hit in AAA that this is why, another reason why I'm like, let's give it some time. Here's another example. Perfect example of like highest pedigree. Spencer Torkelson. Still struggling, but the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. He's the number one overall pick in the draft, arguably the best college hitter ever. Like, and like, sort of, as far as power hitters go, almost not arguably, just flat out. can't hit for power in the majors on a consistent basis. Though when he does hit a home run, it goes very far. It's a problem. And Meyer has been only getting total shine. So I think this is a nice counterpoint to that. It doesn't. This is not flattering, obviously.
No. Did you happen to listen to Jeff Ponce on the Red Seat last week?
No. Did he throw some cold water on our boy?
So Jeff Ponce, for those like Brian who did not listen to the Red Seat podcast on the Monsters and Sox podcast network.
I'm not listening to Keaton. It's just not happening.
So he is he's one of Baseball America's prospect guys. He covers the Northeast. So the Red Sox are within his gambit.
You said gambit. I thought you said gambit.
I did say gambit. You're right. I'm sorry. I meant to say gambit.
Purview, you got me.
I did. Yeah, you're right. Fine. Okay, we'll fix that in editing too.
No, we won't.
Bottom line, he has Meyer, I think, as the number eight prospect in baseball right now. Okay. But here's what he said about him. Amongst other things, he said that Meyer so far is showing a lot more swing and miss in his profile than they expected. More swing and miss in the minors than they expected based on his profile at the draft. He's a little concerned that Meyer is really not a great athlete and thinks he probably will not be able to stick it as short. And he said, when he ultimately came around to give comparisons, he said his absolute 90th percentile outcome is a poor man's Nolan Arenado. And he said his realistic outcome is Jaime Candelario.
Whew.
Yeah. Now, Jaime Candelario is a guy who puts together very solid seasons every now and again. He's OPS plus over 100 right now. He's had a couple of seasons where he's hit sort of 270 with an OBP, in the 350 range. He's been a productive major league infielder. But he's also had some really bad seasons. And the fact is, I don't think any Red Sox fans right now, and it kind of seems like the front office too, is even considering the possibility that Marcelo Meyer just ends up as Jaime Candelario. When in fact, like, we all should acknowledge that that's just how prospects work. No single prospect is likely to be a star. Not a single one. There obviously are stars, future stars, playing in the minor leagues right now, but no single individual prospect is likely to be a star. And, that's a cold, hard fact of reality, but it's a little disconcerting when the entire Red Sox team-building philosophy right now seems to be we're not really going all in until this kid gets here.
Yeah, I mean, this is like – I said last week, and I stand by this, that picking him is one of Bloom's best two moves. But, like, if you're playing poker, you can go all in with a killer hand, and you can lose, you know? And that's not to say that this is going to happen. Obviously, we have many, many, many years before we know how this turns out. But it won't hurt anybody to pump the brakes. At all, because it's just not fair to anybody, frankly, to have the expectations that, like, I think in Red Sox heads, he's sort of like Wander Franco was the number one prospect in baseball for like 2 years. Okay,
and Wander was like he was a known phenom within the industry from the time he was like 12 years old too.
Yeah. He's different.
Like everyone knew who he was.
This is not that. I think the closest thing to that right now is Jackson Holliday, who started this season as like the 15th prospect and is number one now, I think, almost universally. And his dad was Matt Holliday, so that makes a lot of sense, you know?
Right.
But even that's not Wander. And the expectations... Look, you can go look at top 10 prospect lists from every month for the last few years, and you're going to see at least half the names. You're going to be like, oh, that didn't work.
Jerks and Profar was the number one prospect in baseball for like 2 years in a row, like 2 or 3 years in a row.
Sure was. I was thinking that that was like, if you want to see the Red Sox make a move where they say they technically got better, Profar was someone I was thinking of, especially because he had that big game, the only guy who could hit James Paxton. But but this is, I mean, the whole Bloom theory is, philosophy is not that Meyer needs to be the savior. It's that he makes enough moves that, somebody.
This is along, why.
Like the, who's the new guy? Roman Anthony?
Yep.
See?
Yep. He just got promoted. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, this is how it works. Mookie.
This is
Mookie,
why I hate.
Example. They knew Mookie was good, but Mookie's prospect curve was as steep as you're going to see.
Oh, absolutely. He just
outside
like,
of like Juan Soto.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was nothing in his first year in Lowell. And then all of a sudden he just got good and he just stayed good and just shot up the charts. But this is why I get so bothered when you see this all the time from baseball writers, from baseball fans, from executives, from people on Twitter. When people talk about that the most efficient way to win is by building through the minors. That is not what the word efficient means. It's the cheapest way to win, but it is way, way, way more inefficient than by building through free agency. It's way more inefficient because it takes years. Right? Let's break down what the actual word efficient means. It building through the minors takes years, even for a guy like Marcelo Meyer, a guy who is shooting through the system at a pretty quick pace, like is still maybe going to be in Fenway in the second half of next year. Maybe. Okay. Building through the prospects takes a long time. Building through the minors also necessitates you signing 300 guys and hoping that six of them make it to your major league team at one point. Again, that's the opposite of what the word efficient means. It's really just cheaper. And this has been something that's bothered me for years now, that people just throw that word out. It's become an absolute accepted truism of team building, and it's plainly not true. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not a good idea to build through the farm system. Of course, it's an absolutely necessary component of modern baseball team construction. But this idea that like, oh, yes, obviously this is the only way to do it and the right way to do it, the most efficient way to do it, is just not true.
Well, and then there's the flip side of it, is that there's a point where, because they're so unpredictable, you should actually blow it up and trade your minor leaguers.
Sure.
Because you could trade them for known quantities, like the Kopech and Moncada trade for Sale. Prime example of this. Kopech is good now, you know, and Moncada's been an everyday player for years. Still, great trade for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And it's
Hanley Ramirez and Anibal Sanchez for Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell. You have that. There's I haven't looked this up, but I
Mike Lowell, guarantee the Marlins insisted the Red Sox.
Yeah. I haven't looked this up, but I guarantee, knowing how good Hanley was early in his career and knowing how good Anibal Sanchez was, I guarantee you Hanley Ramirez and Anibal Sanchez compiled more WAR after that trade than Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell did. And for that reason, you would have people saying that that is a bad trade. That trade won the Red Sox the 27 World Series.
Yeah.
Unquestionably.
Yeah, it was the MVP and Josh Beckett, who was like the MVP of the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. It unquestionably did.
All right. We should move on to recommendations because we are getting long in the tooth here.
We are. Well, I did have – yeah, we are. All
right, you have one more? You could just do one more.
I had one more. Okay. This isn't about the Red Sox. How angry are you about the facts? That the Oakland Athletics, who finally lost last night, won 7 games in a row, with the 7th win coming on the night of their reverse boycott, in which 27,000 fans packed the Coliseum chanting almost the entire time, sell the team, sell the team, sell the team.
It's unfortunate that that's going to be the last truly cool moment for the A's, I think. Because it's really, really a shame. Look, I understand I understand any sports franchise moving to Vegas because they just see dollar signs, but I get it because football games, especially for visiting fans, are destination based. Yeah. So Vegas makes perfect sense for every other fan base.
The entire NFL is an event based sport. No one cares. I mean, I shouldn't say no one cares about the game itself, right? That's not true. But if you just give someone a ticket to an NFL game, the average American won't even ask who's playing. They're just going to go and they're going to tailgate and they're going to have a good time. That's what I mean by it being like an event-based sport. Like if you get a chance to go to the Super Bowl, you're going to go no matter whether you care about the teams or not. That's not the case in any other American sport where people actually make their consumption decisions based on the actual quality of the products that they're being offered. So the NFL, yeah, will be fine.
Not to get totally political here, but say there was a political party in the United States who actively broke shit and then blamed the other side that the shit was broken. That is exactly what the A's ownership has done to the franchise in Oakland.
Precisely. Yes. Yes.
You made choices. Okay. Yeah. This is not greater factors going on. It's you made choices. And you have what you want now, and it sucks for everyone but you. I guess for Vegas it'll be fine, but
it's not exciting, right? And that I keep thinking about that, like how could any person, no matter how greedy they are, sleep at night knowing that they're taking a baseball team away from millions of people? And I guess the only thing they do is they just compartmentalize and they only think about bringing it to Vegas. They think about making all those people that they're talking with on a daily basis happy. Yeah, that's the only way.
There are a lot more people in the Bay Area than there are in Vegas.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Anyhow, it's depressing. My anger on that is my happiness for the, I'm going to do this anger against the owners so I can be angry today. Yeah. And it's a 10 against the owners rather than, yeah.
All right. You were at 13 for the week. Good. Good. Last week, you were at 31. So I guess you're a little happier this week.
Maybe.
Than last week. That's good. All right. So there we go. You want to talk about the Yankee series a little bit at all?
All right. I forgot about that.
We got Houck and Herman tonight, Bayo Schmidt tomorrow night, and Paxton, the ace, against Luis Severino on Sunday. We obviously saw, the Yankees saw Houck and Bayo last weekend. The Red Sox saw Herman and Schmidt last weekend. Generally speaking, the old rule of thumb is that the hitter has the advantage when they see a pitcher more. And that makes me feel pretty good if I'm the Red Sox, because I think, we don't know what we're going to get from Houck. But of those four pitchers, I would have the most confidence in Bayo. Just in terms of, he's the best pitcher of those four. He's got the best stuff. So I could see him sort of standing up to that second time in 1 week thing better than the other four, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think Houck, that's where the danger is for me, because he pitched well against the Yankees.
One of his best starts of the year.
Yeah, I don't, especially given the way he pitches, I don't expect him to have two really good starts in a row, no matter who he's playing. But that's definitely possible. When you play the same team twice, it scares me a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Severino, for what it's worth, he's making his way back from injury. He's only had five starts this year. He is at all. So I would be Yankees at Fenway this weekend. I'm saying it. Like I said last week, this Yankee team I am not remotely impressed by, and we're missing Garrett Cole this time. You know, we saw Herman and Schmidt both pitched really well against the Red Sox last weekend. Everybody's pitching well against the Red Sox right now, but I think they bounce back against those guys. I think Severino hasn't found it yet. Paxton has. Fuck it. I'll say it. I'm predicting Red Sox sweep.
All right. I'm going 2 out of 3 with them losing the Houck game. I was going to go 1 out of 3 just to balance out last weekend because it's the way baseball works, but I'm with you. Most of it. I'm really worried about the Houck start.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, but I mean, I will say this. For all the – there was some griping, but who cares really about how long it was before the Red Sox played the Yankees. The way the cookie crumbles is that no Judge for the first 6 games is the best you could have
asked for. Yeah, and you know what? I don't I understand that a little bit. I think I do miss the Yankee games a little bit. I understand that. But overall, I'm so much more happy with this balanced schedule. Like, I love the fact that we saw the Padres, even the Rockies last night, who are, you know, one of the least relevant teams in baseball. Like, I'm glad we got to see them.
Well, they won their last series. I don't know if you heard.
Yes, I did. I did hear that. By the way, I forgot to mention this stat. I was going to mention this at the top when we were talking about what a confusing team the Red Sox are in general and how we can't figure out exactly what they are. The Red Sox home record this year is, well, take a guess. Given what
I don't
we
have
discussed
to because I had the standings pulled up for a lot of this. So yeah, I know they're 18 and 18.
They're exactly 500 at home. They're 18 and 18. That 18 and 18 record includes the fact that they have gone 2-10 at home against the Pirates, Cardinals, Reds, and Rockies.
It's the first place.
Now, the Pirates are you. Yeah, the Pirates are still 2 games above 500. As we discussed, they look pretty good.
Their run differential is not good, though. The entire division has a negative run differential.
Yeah. And when we talked about liking the Pirates, O'Neill Cruz was still healthy and playing, and he no longer is. But yeah, that is 18-18 at home, and they're getting brutalized by some of the worst teams in baseball this year. Just weird and bizarre.
All right, recommendations.
Recommendations. I'm gonna recommend if you don't have one and you don't live in an apartment building, go get yourself a screen door. We moved into a new house last spring, and it didn't have a screen door in the back leading to the backyard. And it just never got around to putting one in last summer. There's too many other things to do. And I finally, this past weekend, put in a screen door. Got a really nice one from Anderson. It's less than $200. It doesn't open out like a traditional screen door. It just sort of it works on a roller, so it like rolls up. You press a button, it slides to the side and rolls up. And it's like, look, I have had screen doors in my life before, so maybe as a result, I just didn't appreciate it. But after a year of not being able to open my back door in my kitchen to the backyard, now that I can just open it up and close the screen door, it's really made my daily life so much better. So if you don't have a screen door, go out and get one. I should have done it a year ago.
Mine's an Instagram account, and the guy is sort of arrogant, but that's part of the act. It's called Card Tricks by Jason. He's a guy. It's like,
is that what you've been doing this entire time?
So I will tell you.
I don't know, listeners, I don't know if you can hear this, but for the past 20 minutes, Brian has not been making eye contact with me, and he's just been doing what I assume is playing solitaire.
No,
while I've
no,
been
no,
talking
no, no, no,
and
no,
not
no.
listening to me at all.
No, I'm cutting the cards with one hand so that I can practice. This is really good. Yeah, people are going to hear it. Fancy. I'm going to stop now.
Yeah.
And he's like people will send him challenges being like, you can't make the 10th hand and a thing, this hand. And he just does it every time. And half the time he'll just tell you what he's doing. Even as he's like shuffling, he's like, now I'm putting the aces here and I'm doing that. And he's just, it always works. And I show his videos to my poker crew and they're like, oh, it's not true. It's not true. And I was like,
I didn't know you had a poker crew.
Well, we haven't played.
I didn't know you were that type of guy.
I was when I lived in Brooklyn, and I lived up until COVID. Anyhow, we played like every Thursday. He explains how he's doing the tricks often, and you just don't believe he could do it because you can't do it. But then some of the tricks, I just look them up on YouTube. There's tutorials for how to do pretty much any card trick you want to do.
You know what? Actually,
go ahead.
That's really interesting that you brought this up. Were you ever into magic as a kid?
I mean, I love the idea of being able to do it, but I have not.
I went through a magic phase when I was probably like 8 years old, maybe, where like, you know, I got into it and I would get magic books and learn magic tricks and things like that. And it hasn't occurred to me until right now that thanks to the internet, are kids ever going to get into it again?
Yeah, it's
because
so,
at least like
it's I'll tell you, because I've been watching these videos, and he says all the time, I've been doing this for 30 years. I've been doing this for 30 years. The whole point of it, like Ricky Jay, right? Seeing one of my favorite movies ever. This should be my recommendation, is Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants. Yeah, that's much better than this one guy's Instagram account. Yeah. And it's an hour long. And it's directed by David Mamet. This is Ricky Jay doing card tricks. And like my whole poker crew, this is the whole point. They were like, this is fake. And I tried to tell them, no, it's not. They're card tricks. They're designed to fool you.
They're fake by nature.
So they
fool
you. I mean,
that's the thing. Like, they're fake by nature. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy will do videos. He's like, you can look for these things in home games with shuffles because look what I can do. And it's just like, you just be like, okay, yeah. If I played with you, I would never win a hand.
Yeah,
because it's not, and so I was looking up how to do the tricks, and what I'm doing here is they say the way you learn to like do a pass, which is get your card on top of the deck without people noticing, you got to be able to flip one half under the other, and that's hard. You need to build up the strength, and the basic video I've watched is you put rubber bands on both sides and just practice flipping it up. And so I just have said, when I'm sitting idle, I'm just going to practice just strengthening my pinky and my fingers so I can pull one side. It's like, I'll never be good at it, but it's fun to do. So yeah, that's it.
But what I'm worried about is because you can now just look up any single trick in the world. Like when we were kids, there were regularly, you know, big magic specials on TV. And it would be a big deal. And people would watch, like, you know, everyone watched David Copperfield make the Statue of Liberty disappear. That's never going to happen again.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he does it, there's going to be someone on Twitter explaining how it happened. And in fact, it has since been explained. I don't know. Did you read that? There's like, yeah. It's an open secret now.
Is it just mirrors? It's always mirrors.
It's, if you rewatch the trick itself, you know, there's like a stage and there's a crowd of people who are on the island with him. And what he did was he put that stage on rollers and he very, very slowly moved the stage so that like when he started the trick, the Statue of Liberty was behind them. He then puts a big giant curtain up to separate the two. Moves the stage, pulls the curtain down, the Statue of Liberty's gone. Like, that's it. That's all it was.
My point, though.
That was one of the biggest TV events of, like, 1992 or whatever. And that was, like, and nowadays, you would try and do that. Someone on Twitter would be like, the stage is on wheels, and no one would give a shit ever again.
But my point is that's only... Just watch Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants and tell me the people aren't going to... You could know how the card trick is done. It doesn't matter. Right. If you see it done in front of your face, you're just not going to believe it. It's like your brain just can't handle it.
I will give it a shot. Like I said, former magic kid. So I will give it a shot.
Well, I played Magic the Gathering, but that's not what you meant.
I did not do that because I was not a complete nerd. I
still have my deck, man. So enough out of you. All right. I'm going to send a fireball Dan's way with my mana and end this podcast because he called me a nerd as a kid, which I was and still am. That's it for the 500. I don't know who it was, Jake Keaton or Bob that wrote it. The most 500 team to ever exist. The Hartford Whalers might have something to say about that, but these Red Sox are giving them a run for the money. Hopefully Dan is right and they sweep the Yankees. But if they do not, even if they do, we'll be back next week. Dan, have a good one.
You too, man. Take care.